You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 19 June. The U.S. markets are closed today for Juneteenth. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Mateta Tulari from Investec. I want to ask around the rand. The hawkish Fed FOMC suddenly saw the rand weaker. And then my follow-up question is going to be, can we get back below 16? The dollar index is back at 100. So I don't know. We'll get some thoughts on that. We're chatting with the CEO of Frank, their wealth index report for 2026. One of the interesting points is that women tend to be better investors. And then thoughts from me on SpaceX being fast-tracked into global indices and hence into ETFs tracking those indices. Yep, we're looking at you, NASDAQ. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Analysts say Sasol may still offer value despite the rally and the drop in oil price. Business Day, BHP takes $2.3 billion hit as the Jansen potash costs surge. It's gone from a $4 billion-odd project to a $6 billion project. Morning markets, US was green, S&P just over 1% higher, NASDAQ 2.5% higher. The Easter's mixed. We've got Sydney down 0.7%. We've got Tokyo up 0.5%. And then we've got Hong Kong closed for Dragon Boat Festival Day, which also means no 10-cent trading. Commodities mostly red. Gold futures, 4,185. Brent is the only green, 79.56. Platinum, 1,680. Palladium, 1,272. The rand is 16.49. Bitcoin, 62,700. Top 40 opening call, red open, 1,000 points, 1% down.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Mateta Tulari from Investec. Mateta, I always appreciate the early morning. We had the FOMC earlier in the week. They didn't make any changes, but it does seem that the markets are expecting one, maybe in the October meeting, certainly maybe even two rate hikes from the Fed. Although the press conference afterwards, the new chair, he seemed to dodge the question. Your thoughts? The rand was doing quite nicely, and then suddenly a hawkish Fed seemed to have spooked the currency a bit.
Yeah, good morning, Simon. I suppose, yes, a hawkish Fed earlier this week. I mean, that means higher for longer U.S. rates. I mean, when the Fed struck a hawkish tone on the back of surging energy prices arising from the Middle East conflict, which has obviously clouded the inflation outlook. And the Fed did warn of risks that energy costs that are rising could mean persistent inflation. I mean, on the back of that, you see dollar rally and the rand lose a bit of ground, and obviously the rising energy cost concerns, but also the other the other factor is the carry trade unwind. I mean, when the Fed maintains a hawkish stance, you do see a capital flow back to the dollar. You also seeing emerging market currencies, being vulnerable, and also hot money exiting. But also just from a local perspective, I mean, that means imported inflation for the currency. I mean, the challenge for the Reserve Bank that effectively we are importing inflation through the currency. And I mean, every tick in dollar rand that goes higher, it means that, you know, we are needing to maintain a tighter stance. A hawkish Fed means a weaker rand, which means higher food and fuel inflation, meaning the SARB can't cut. So SA assets will remain under pressure. And I suppose this is why you are seeing this morning with dollar rand around that 16.49 level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it had been, I think it was sub 16.20 earlier in the week. And I was looking at the dollar index. It had been down around 96 points. It's now firmly back at 100 points as we speak. I mean, is there a world in which the rand can sort of head back below the 16? I mean, the dollar index is at, what, highest levels since early last year. Are we going back below 16 anytime soon?
Look, so, I mean, I think it's conditional. If anything, I mean, the last time we were below 16 was in January this year.
Yep.
And you look at some of the fundamental reasons why gold was around 5,100. The dollar was at four-year lows. You know, the recipe was that, you know, commodities were ripping higher. The Fed was about to cut. But everything has changed, you know.
Yeah.
At this point in time, you know, the whole script has been flipped. Unfortunately, yes, you know, as much as the agreements have been signed and we have a 60-day, you know, ceasefire, we've seen this movie play itself out. We need certainty. Anything could happen. But also at the same time, it's also the inflation prints that are coming through in the next few months. I think central bank governors will have to take that into account, given the fact that this is when you start going to see, you know, the pass through of the oil spike in what we saw over the past few months. And obviously, how does that really feed into inflation? I mean, as much as we're discussing it yesterday, it's also what happens with Lesetša Kganyago also come July the 23rd. I mean, obviously, he will have had another inflation print. Does it mean, does he hike? Does he not hike? Does he maintain his credibility? All these things play a role. And obviously, unfortunately, the Rand will be whipsawed up until we have some sort of finality and certainty as to where we're going in the world.
Yeah, I take that. Rand volatility is perhaps more than anything of what I think we can expect a fair bit of going forward. We'll leave it there. That's Metetse Tolari from Investec. Always appreciate the early morning time. And that's our question today on LinkedIn. What do you take on the currency? Do you think we go back through 16? I suppose the question is maybe, but there's a lot of moving parts there. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Taking with Dr. Thomas Brennan, he's founder and CEO at Frank. Thomas, appreciate the time today. Your Frank Wealth Index report 2026 just came out. Give us some of the details around the report before we dig into some of the findings.
Yeah, Simon, thanks very much. We thought it was really important to get a measure of where financial well-being is at in the country. We were able to survey nearly 4,000 individuals, and we measure financial well-being in a very holistic way. So we cover just the basics, obviously, resilience, like emergency savings, what you're doing with your money, what is your investing behavior, and lastly, your mindset. How are you feeling? How confident are you? Are you planning for the future? So it is the largest survey done in South Africa, which we're very proud of. And obviously, we want to continue going forward to look at some of the longitudinal trends that we hopefully can see about what behaviors are driving financial well-being in the country.
Yeah, take a minute. I read through it, and there's a bunch I want to touch on. For you, what would be a key finding that came out of the report?
For me, what is really dramatic was how significant behaviors are compared to things like income. So for the longest time, I think people think that, like, if I just earn more, I'll be better off. But what we see in the data is actually it's what you do with the money that you have that actually is a far greater predictor of improved financial well-being. And those are really sort of those daily money habits that are easy, one can think about. Sure. You know, they're not complex, but they do require building up and having that discipline to nurture those habits.
It's actually interesting because I had a conversation with a certified financial planner earlier in the week, and that's exactly what we were talking around without the data so much to back it up. But it really is a case of, as you say, it's around the sort of the doing more than the earning, and it's the holistic nature of it. It's the regularity, it's the consistency, it's the reviewing. It's things which are kind of intangible, but they have a real impact.
Without a doubt. And I think if people were to be honest themselves, like, where do my money habits come from? I think people would realize that there's a lot that's probably inherited, you know, if you will, from your upbringing, which you're bringing from your parents or your family. And so to actually be honest about, like, okay, well, what is my relationship with money? What are my habits? And then obviously, what we identify is that people having a couple of just key changes, you know, like something as simple as like saving for emergencies and having sufficient liquid savings to cover, you know, 3 months of expenses has a cascading consequence. So not only obviously do you feel less stress, but you also are then able to start thinking for the future and start planning and start taking on investment risk. So we see some of these keystone behaviors, and like paying yourself first is another clear example. Just by setting up, doesn't matter how small it is, but the fact that you do that on a regular basis and you try sort of automate it, if you will, as much as possible, you don't have to rely on kind of willpower every month at the end of the month, obviously, when there's, you know, pressure for any cash. So paying yourself first, it's such a simple thing to say, but very hard to do.
But I like what you said there about pressure, because that comes to mindset. And one of the things that stood out for me, and it's intuitive, but you know, the two behaviors particularly significant were debt and having debt and not having emergency funded. And that's a financial challenge in both examples, but it's also, it's a psychological challenge at the same time. Debt can overwhelm us. Not having an emergency fund can make a lot of what would otherwise be perhaps minor things a lot more scary.
Without a doubt. And I think, you know, attacking the debt first is obviously the right place to start. Because if you are overwhelmed and you're running month to month, I do think, though, that there is an opportunity of, even if it is just setting up that behavior of putting aside some money for emergencies, that will undoubtedly help you. Mm-hmm. And indeed, if an emergency does come along, that you don't have to go into yet more debt to cover the expenses, that you can kind of like lessen the burden. So I think there is an opportunity for people to kind of like just realize, if you get on top of your debt and you're able to put some money aside for emergencies, you are by far and away doing more than the sort of the average Joe in terms of enabling better financial futures.
The other thing that stood out for me, and as you said, financial well-being doesn't improve with more income than I got. It doesn't improve with age. And I would have said it did. But actually, in hindsight, well, not necessarily. Again, being older doesn't necessarily make me smarter or anything, but it can become a significant challenge if we're not, I don't know, getting smarter as we age. And I suppose, in a sense, maybe learning from our mistakes.
Yeah, we saw two clear, distinct personas. We call them sort of the disciplined builders. So these were younger people starting off in their career, definitely less income and less sort of total net worth. But what they did have were very good habits.
Yeah.
They had the same financial well-being score as what we call sort of the stalled professionals. So these are people that are, you know, 10 years older, probably earning, you know, significantly more, but their lifestyle has crept in. They're not managing their expenses. They're not sort of saving appropriately. So there, the behavior is less, although they are probably older, probably a little bit wiser. They haven't been able to kind of manage their personal finances in a way that actually leads to, you know, better financial well-being.
Yeah. Another data point that stood out for me, although it's something which I've seen evidence and I've certainly thought it, but women were ahead.
They are. And I think what's really positive, you know, to see is the way in which women are investing is actually where the secret sauce is. Mm-hmm. So they are, you know, traditionally, and also tend to be, we see in the data, less the risk averse. So they're not, they don't think they're cowboys. They're not trying to time the markets and get lucky. There's far less sort of trading activity, but they are very consistent. So there's that sort of regular debit order, that money's going in into the investments. Once they've set up that strategy, they keep on executing on that. And then simply by doing that and leaving that investment over time, they're enjoying, you know, the compound growth benefits that come with that.
Yeah.
But what's interesting in the data, I'm so sure, the women at the same time also express higher financial anxiety.
Yeah.
And I think there we've got sort of like a historical trend, if you will. A lot of women are maybe for the first time taking control of their finances, maybe a little bit more unsure, you know, am I doing the right thing? So for the same sort of level of, you know, of your personal finances, I think the women are probably carrying a little bit more anxiety into that situation.
And that could also be related to the risk, because it's in my anecdotal experience is that men take the risk, women don't. And therefore, maybe it's that lower risk level, which makes them a little bit more anxious. The other big one that came out was education. And not that education is the bullet which solves everything, but that education creates a strong foundation. You still need the patterns, the behaviors on top. And here we're not talking around a, you know, a fancy varsity degree, just like, you know, going and finding out, I don't know, what a tax-free account is. That really is not surprising, but it is creating a strong base.
Yeah, without a doubt. And obviously, for those, you know, listeners who want to improve their financial well-being, I, you know, would encourage them to read the report, because really even developing the knowledge about which behaviors can lead to the biggest sort of material gains, you know, that's not knowing the details of, you know, capital gains tax, for example, but it's financial knowledge in the sense that it can help you improve your financial well-being.
Yeah, actually, that's a great point. And it's where it helps, which is also fundamentally important. We'll leave it there. That's the Frank Wealth Index Report 2026. Frank with a C. That's Dr. Thomas Brennan, founder and CEO. Appreciate the time. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Thoughts on me on SpaceX being fast-tracked into a number of global indices and hence the ETFs that track those indices. To be clear, rules have been changed here so that we can get SpaceX into the indexes quicker than usual. And to be S&P did not change the rules. S&P was like, no fam, we are good. We are leaving rules exactly as they are. We don't see any particular need to do it. And those rules are that you've got to be listed for 12 months, you've got to have enough free float, and that you need to actually be profitable. You need positive GAAP earnings over the previous quarter and positive over the preceding four quarters as well. So the S&P, which is the big one, of course, the S&P 500 will not be including SpaceX yet. They're going to wait a year. But more importantly, they want to see those positive GAAP earnings in the most recent quarter and summed over trailing four quarters, and they want adequate free float. So S&P, nope, thanks, not happening. But the others, NASDAQ, the FTSE Russell and the MSCI did change their rules. The MSCI updated its free float adjustment factor. They did already have rules for fast tracking stocks, but what they've done here is it's the free float. There's not very much of SpaceX that is a free float. And what I mean by free float is available to trade on market, not locked up. And at the moment, that is sitting in around 5%, which would normally exclude. But in the case of MSCI, they have changed that, which means it'll go into the MSCI World Index ETFs. Those are the most of what that we're going to be seeing locally. It'll be a relatively small weighting at this point in time, but it will be in, and in fact, it'll be if happening. I think it's probably happening effective close of last night. The FTSE Russell has also adopted new IPO fast entry rules. The first is that it can come in just 5 days after public trading, which again means effective last night, which practically will be Monday because the US has closed this evening. The standard 5% free float and 5% voting right thresholds apply, but can be waived, they say, if upcoming lock-up expiries will push them past that 5% within 12 months. Now, what's happened is a lot of existing shareholders are locked in for a period of time, a month, 3 months, 6 months. In the case of SpaceX, most of that expires within 6 months, which means, yep, it'll be in the FTSE Russell indices and hence ETFs. That's not a big story for us, really. We don't particularly have, beyond the JSE indices, much FTSE Russell, so not the big one. And then NASDAQ, and perhaps this is the biggest changes. The first is the fast entry rule. A newly listed company that with market cap would land it in the top 40 of the NASDAQ 100s can now be added to the index after just 15 trading days. That is next Friday. The wait used to be 12 months. The second is the removal of a 10% minimum free float requirement. In its place, they've got a sliding weighting rule. Companies with a free float below 33% are weighted up to three times their actual free float, which means that they come in and they will come in into the NASDAQ at around 0.7% weighting, which puts them about number 25 in the index. So certainly they'll be in NASDAQ from next Friday. To be clear, to be very clear, changing long-standing rules for a company to get in quickly into an index and hence an ETF is frankly a horrid idea. This is absolutely a horrid idea, but here we are. That's it for today. Chatting with Petli Radenhaes yesterday. He, of course, Herenia Capital Advisors. Talking around the Iranian war. Seemingly it's over. Both sides have signed the 14-point agreement. We're now into 60 days of talks. It's going to be messy. It's going to be full of loud, shouty tweets and stuff like that. But we've got the war over, perhaps oil But back below 80s, we asked you if it was time for consumer stocks. Particularly did like cash retailers. You said half of you said too early to tell. The rest was split between still lots of pain and, yep, outlook much improved. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. Common money mistakes that affect long-term financial security.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.